This is Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon and Julian McKenzie on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We are into hour two on this Friday. Logan Gordon, Julian McKenzie along with you.
Yes, sir.
Yesterski, live in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studios. Your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. Visit dlbasementsystemscalgary.com. Playoff talk in hour one. Taking a look at Canada's World Men's Hockey Championship roster, which includes Flames forward Andrew Mangiapane, and a look at what's next for the Winnipeg Jets after their series loss with Murat Ateş of The Athletic. If you missed any of that, check us out on the podcast. Google, Amazon, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher. We'd love to have you along on Sportsnet today. Still to come, we'll chat some Calgary Wranglers hockey. Their first game of round two is tonight at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. CalgaryWranglers.com/playoffs. If you haven't got your tickets, get to the dome for game one. I'll have pregame with GVP at 6 o'clock tonight. 7 o'clock puck drop with Sandra Priscina and Matt Rose right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan, and still to come this afternoon. Get your texts in at 960-960. The Friday DMs with Logan and Julian. Whatever you want to chat about.
Oh, those are going to be fun. It's
always a fun way to end off the week. We open the show up to you. Doesn't have to be sports related. Just going to have a lot of fun with the listeners. 960-960. You can start sending them in now to the Fan feedback inbox. We'll have producer Shan go through those a little bit later on. He's part of our dynamic production duo alongside Cameron Hughes. Right now, though, getting set for two Stanley Cup playoff games on this Friday. Two game sixes, Nashville and the Vancouver Canucks, Dallas and the Vegas Golden Knights, and of course, reacting to a big win by the Toronto Maple Leafs in their game six on Thursday night. Very happy to chat some NHL with our next guest. It's Matt Marchese, Fan Checkdown, Jeff Merrick Show, a little bit of everything, and he joins us this afternoon. Thanks for doing this, Matty. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
We're doing good, pal. Just hanging out, getting set for some hockey tonight, but of course, reacting, of course, to the big Game 6 victory for the Leafs last night. Did you think they had it in them, two wins without Austin Matthews, to force this to a seven? Were you a believer in this comeback?
No, not a chance. No, absolutely not a chance. I've seen this movie so many times. This is a different movie, though. This is absolutely a different movie. I had messaged a couple of friends. Like, I have a buddy who's like diehard, has all the Leafs gear, whatever. And he posted something on his Instagram that said, "It's not over yet, blah, blah, blah." And I messaged him and I said, after ahead of game five, I said, "It's over." And then, you know, ahead of game six, he didn't even post anything. And, you know, the stupid superstitions that I have, I messaged him again and I said, "It's over." So I'm going to have to text him again tomorrow to tell him that it's over. Listen, they've played in a way that I didn't know that this team was capable of in the playoffs. And that is getting down in lanes, blocking shots, playing physically, and not letting the moment get too big for them. The fact that they're doing this without the guy that led the league in scoring by 13 goals, to me, is as impressive as any performance. What they did in the last two games was they out-Boston Bruins the Boston Bruins. That's what Boston did. They suffocated them in three of the first four games, and you kind of look at it and go like, okay, you know, that's what Boston did successfully. The Leafs have been able to do that in the last two games. And, you know, maybe that's having a goalie that's playing with some confidence, that's getting William Nylander and then him actually getting into the series after missing a few games, all of those things. That's how we've gotten to this game seven, but in a roundabout way, shocked that we are here.
You mentioned how the Leafs are playing this playoff gritty style. Is there no player who has best been able to play that style for the Leafs more than Matthew Knies?
I don't think so. I was talking about this on the show with Jeff today. You know, that the Leafs series against Florida last year, I know people will say, well, look at the how the series went, blah, blah, blah. But the Leafs were the better team in a bunch of those, in at least two of the first three games, I thought. And so what happened was they lost the one guy on last year's roster, and they have a little bit more of that grit this year, but the one guy on that roster that had speed, played physically, and had some size. And that, and once they lost Matthew Knies, the series changed a little bit. What we've seen from Matthew Knies is a continuation of what we saw against Tampa last year. He was physical. He got in on the forecheck. He's matured as a player because he's certainly better defensively than he was in the previous playoff. He looks like a player that's been in the league a little bit. And that was something, he came out of college and played in NHL playoff games. Like that's not an easy transition. So the fact that he's improved defensively, he's responsible with the puck. The play that he made on the Nylander goal was a prime example of that. That was I called it a big boy play. He could have just chipped it up the boards and maybe William Nylander gets it, maybe not, but he took a hit to make a play. And that's part of winning in the playoffs. That is also part of being physical that we don't talk about, is being able to withstand, you know, hits against you and taking hits to make plays. I thought Matthew Knies, I know William Nylander scored two goals, but there were some shifts where Nylander was kind of out to lunch. I thought Matthew Knies was their best forward yesterday. I also thought, you know, when we talk about grittiness and that playoff style, I thought finding an actual third line that is a checking line was perfect. David Camp, Kali Yarncroak, and Connor Dewar were really good yesterday. They had lots of sustained pressure in the Boston zone, and allowing the other players to get a breather and while creating offense of their own. You know, the bottom six, the rule generally speaking is you don't necessarily have to score, but don't get scored on. And they've been able to do that. So I thought the Camp line was really good. I thought Knies was excellent. Knies has been he's probably been their most consistent forward in these playoffs, maybe outside of Max Domi, who's still frustrating because he doesn't shoot. But I think this feels like a bit of a coming out party for Matthew Knies.
How good has Joseph Woll been in this series for the Leafs?
Oh, I mean, when they were talking about the goalie change, I was going, well, it's not like Samsonov was the problem. He was part of the problem, but not the problem. Joseph Woll just exudes a different type of confidence that Ilya Samsonov does. And, you know, when we look at this, Joseph Woll in the playoffs has only played in elimination games. He is 3-1 in his playoff career. All four games have been elimination games. And he's been excellent. You know, when they lost to the Panthers last year in game 5 of that series, Joseph Woll was probably the best player on the ice for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And unfortunate the way that it ended for him and Radko Gudas yelling in his face. But when he was coming back into the lineup later, you know, after dealing with the injury, I said it on the air on multiple shows. The Leafs want Joseph Woll to be the guy. And if you had asked them who they wanted to be the guy for game 83, it was probably Joseph Woll. The problem was he didn't play well enough, and Samsonov did leading up to that point, that made it so that Ilya Samsonov was going to start game 1 of the playoffs. It was going to take a lot for Samsonov to not get the net, but being down 3-1 and needing some sort of a spark, and you don't have Austin Matthews, the only thing they could have done was put Joseph Woll in, and he has been excellent. I didn't think that there was going to be a goalie on this Leaf roster that could battle Jeremy Swayman the way that Swayman has been playing. I think that Joseph Woll has been fantastic. And I mean, that kind of goes without saying, but yesterday not getting any action basically for a period and a half, and then having to stop a barrage of shots for the last 30 minutes, that's not an easy thing. So to be kind of mentally level, I think that's so important. And I think that's what Joseph Woll does really well. The moment doesn't seem too big for him, for a guy that really doesn't have a lot of NHL experience and not a lot of pro experience, guys. He's battled injuries over his pro career, and he hasn't played as much as a lot of other guys, whether it be at the AHL level or the NHL level. It's not a lot of games, especially considering his age. So I just think that he's kind of been the great equalizer, because when you looked at the series, you said, okay, Boston's defense better than Toronto's offense better than Boston's. And then when you look in the net, Boston had the edge, whether it was Swayman or Allmark, and I think putting Joseph Woll in net over Ilya Samsonov has really closed that gap.
Matty, what's changed for the Boston Bruins in these last two games where they haven't been able to finish at the same rate? Has it been solely the change in goal, or are they not executing something at the same level as they did in the first couple games?
I think the change in goal is part of the problem. I think it's a confidence thing with the Bruins right now. I think that they got into that game in game five, and Joseph Woll goes in, and you know, the Leafs have also played a lot better in their own zone. They're doing a lot better job of just clogging the middle of the ice, something that Boston has done really well in this series. And still, even over the last two games that Toronto's won, Boston has done a really good job of it. So I think there's been adjustments that have been made on the Toronto side that Boston hasn't been able to handle. Blocking shots would be one of them, clogging lanes. It feels like there's just more desperation in Toronto than there is in Boston. And at the end of the day, whether the Leafs win or Boston wins, one of these coaches, I think, is going to find themselves in some hot water. But I think now the Leafs coming back and getting to a game seven, weirdly, even though they've had these playoff demons, especially against Boston, it feels like all the pressure is still on Boston, and it feels like it's getting to them for a second straight year. Am I going to go out and say that Toronto is going to win game seven? I don't know. It's game seven. It's a toss-up. Boston just looks not confident right now. And somebody pointed, I think it was Kevin Bieksa, that pointed out, and it's not that Brad Marchand is a bad leader. We don't know. We think he's a pretty good leader. But boy, oh boy, when you don't have Patrice Bergeron after having him for so long, I do wonder how much of that plays into, you know, how the Bruins are coming out right now. They've been shell-shocked in the first period of each of the last two games. And I think that set the tone for the rest of the game. The Leafs have been accused for years of not starting on time. They picked a really good time to start on time.
Counterpoint to the leadership void with the Boston Bruins that's being raised here. They lost that series against Florida. They blew a 3-1 series lead with Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci as their centers.
Sure. Totally agree. I just think that it's the start of it, right? Because we kind of thought the Bruins weren't going to be very good this year, mm-hmm. and they were good. So I think it's in those big moments, and maybe it is a little too hyperbolic to think that Patrice Bergeron is going to, guys, I'm sorry. My daughter wants me to help her with something.
Oh, right. That's all good. That's so fine.
Dad comes first. Daddy needs yeah, comes
you gotta first. Be a dad but, first, Matt.
Yeah, I know. But okay, Abigail, you need to relax for 2 seconds, okay? So anyway, it may be too hyperbolic that Patrice Bergeron would be making the difference, but I think just having that calming presence is just something that they're lacking right now. Because the other thing is, too, is does it not feel like Brad Marchand, who's been towing the line really well, is almost ready to step over that line from what you've seen the last two games? Like, it really does feel like they need someone other than Jim Montgomery to tell him to calm down. So I think it's just different scenario, sure. I think last year their issue with why they couldn't close out was they made way too many changes. Mm. That roster, you know, you look at the bringing in Bertuzzi and Orlov and Hathaway, and those are just three guys. They brought in a couple of other ones. I think this year it's just, this is our team. This is what we've dealt with. And, you know, they weren't great 5-on-5 this season. They really struggled with that. And the power play hasn't been as effective the last two games, which has been the difference maker. I just think that there's a lot going into what's gone wrong with the Boston Bruins. Maybe leadership is one of them, but certainly confidence is probably at the top of the list.
What did you think of Jim Montgomery saying that David Pastrnak needs to step up in this series?
First thing was, he ain't wrong. I think the Leafs have actually done a really good job of playing him physically, because David Pastrnak is not a shrinking violet. Like, he doesn't shy away from playing physically or when he's hit, but the Leafs have done something that I don't think that we expected them to do. And that's really take it to David Pastrnak physically. I don't know if he's 100% healthy. It seems like he is. But they're also getting in his shooting lanes too. The other thing too with Jim Montgomery coming out and saying that is, that's where, and I said this to Jeff today, that's where I wonder if Jim Montgomery is feeling the pressure for his own job. And he maybe needs to try and, you know, take that one last shot to get something out of, you know, his 100-point score, which is what David Pastrnak was. You know, Jake DeBrusk has been pretty silent over the last two or three games. Brad Marchand certainly has been silent on the goal scoring and point front, but he's also been going to the box more in the last two games. And he's been, you know, again, on the edge where, you know, you think he's going to lean more towards crossing it rather than staying on the side where he's not taking penalties. So I think Jim Montgomery is feeling the heat right now. I think when you don't get scoring from the guy that you expect to score goals in big moments, I think that's really frustrating. I think it just speaks to what the Leafs have done. And frankly, I don't think the Bruins were expecting the Leafs to have this kind of fight in them, because we've seen it in the past. Like I said, we've seen this movie before where the Leafs, they can't handle the pressure, you know, and that's where I think the surprise with the Bruins is, especially Jim Montgomery. I don't think he thought the Leafs could play this way and really kind of take it to them. And not only that, but play really well defensively. I just don't think that they saw this coming.
Matt Marchese along with us, chatting all things Stanley Cup playoffs on this Friday. We've got a couple of game sixes coming our way tonight, Matty. We'll start with the Vancouver Canucks and the Nashville Predators. Speaking of underperformers, fair to say that, as we talked about David Pastrnak in that series for the Bruins, Elias Pettersson getting a similar rep for Vancouver, despite them being up 3-2 against Nashville?
He is. And, you know, this is, I'm so hesitant with players in the playoffs, because you guys know, you guys have been watching games and covering teams for a while. Like, you know, when it comes to the playoffs, guys are playing hurt. I do wonder if Elias Pettersson is playing hurt. That's another guy that the opposing team has really taken it to him physically, and he hasn't had a response. That's why I do wonder if there is an injury here that he's playing through. I think that 70% of players in the playoffs are playing through injuries right now. I think that's a low number. But Pettersson signed the big deal, and since he signed the big deal, the numbers haven't been there. And I'm not accusing him of bailing, but it's just the timing is, you know, very curious. And so they're going to need him to, because the one thing in this series that we've talked about is Vancouver hasn't been able to break through offensively. And credit to the Nashville Predators for doing that. But if Elias Pettersson is playing at the top of his game, the power play is better. 5-on-5, you're better. The places where you can score goals, and Elias Pettersson has been able to do that pretty frequently over the course of the last couple of seasons. So I think he's battling something. I guess we'll find out once the Vancouver Canucks season is done. But I also, that's why I'm very hesitant to be super critical of guys unless I know that they're not dealing with anything. And so I'm not out here to report that Elias Pettersson is dealing with something, but it does feel like he is. This series has gone, I mean, a lot of people thought it could go at least six, but I think I said it, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, I just thought the series was going to look different. I thought it could go six or seven, but I also thought it was going to be a little bit more high scoring. And then if you would have told me that Vancouver is on to goalie number three, I definitely would have said, well, absolutely, this is going to be high scoring. And it hasn't. So it's concerning that Vancouver hasn't been able to break through offensively. And probably the biggest reason for that is the guy who was among their leading scorers on the team that just signed a big ticket hasn't been able to produce. Credit to the Nashville Predators for doing so. But also, I wonder if Elias Pettersson is anywhere near 100%.
I wonder about the Nashville Predators, and I'm glad you described them the way that they did. The way that they've been playing in this series, I think in a different universe, they would be leading in this series, if not have already beaten the Vancouver Canucks. No shade to the Canucks, who have the talent that they have, and they very well could end this in game six. But I totally see this going the other way. I would love to know your thoughts about the Nashville Predators.
Well, let's look at the game where they're up with 2.5 minutes left, and they, well, frankly, they pissed it away. And that's where the series, we could be talking Vancouver is playing for their playoff lives tonight and not the Nashville Predators. I kind of liken what Nashville has gone through over the course of the season with what Andrew Burnett's previous team, the Florida Panthers, have gone through with Paul Maurice. We all remember Paul Maurice and taking over that Panthers team and how they weren't a loss to get into the playoffs. After winning the President's Trophy, you know, they bow out to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Andrew Burnett loses his job, ends up taking an assistant job with New Jersey. Florida was this team that could not stop a beach ball to save their lives. They couldn't defend, all of that. It took Paul Maurice a long time to implement everything that went into what the Florida Panthers ended up becoming. I'm not comparing the Nashville Predators to the Florida Panthers, but what I've seen is an evolution of this team over the course of the season. And of course, canceling the going to the U2 concert has to be included in there. But all joking aside, I think what we've seen is Andrew Burnett really got his claws into this team and was able to mold it into what he wants it to look like, whether it be how they play defensively, how they attack offensively, all of those things. It just took time. If they lose in six games, I don't think anybody is going to be super surprised, but I don't think anybody's going to say, well, this was a lost year in Nashville. They weren't supposed to be here. And so I just think that we don't give coaches, it's like you want everything is, you know, we live in the microwave society where I want everything done in 30 seconds. Well, that doesn't work for coaching and put, you know, with what is generally a pretty young roster. They do have some veteran players in Nashville, but you know, it's not a team that anybody expected anything from. It just took Andrew Burnett some time to really evolve this team and get it into what he wants to see from them. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. The Nashville Predators are a tough out, and we've witnessed that, you know, especially last game.
We should move to Dallas and Vegas here. We saw the Golden Knights take a 2-0 series lead, and then Dallas has done a complete 180, and now they're in the driver's seat in that first-round series. How do you see the rest of that first-round series going?
Oh, I hope it goes seven. That's what I hope.
Me too.
I see. I mean, that is the one series where, and I know, you know, I did say it before the playoffs started, and Colorado certainly didn't look like they do now, but I thought the team that represents the Western Conference in the Stanley Cup final was going to come from this series. I thought they were the two best teams from top to bottom when you look at how they're both built. They've got both have really good forward groups, really good defensive groups, and you know, we saw what Adin Hill could do in the playoffs last year. Part of that is the defensive scheme that they play in front of him and how good the defense is. But still, you could see it from both of these teams going on a lengthy cup run. What happened was I just think Dallas got a little bit more lucky as the series progressed. They played really well offensively and even defensively in game one. It's just Jake Oettinger, a little bit unfortunate, certainly didn't have his best game, but Oettinger got better. The Dallas Stars got a little bit more fortunate. You could easily make the case that this series could be over right now, the way that Dallas played in game two, just weren't fortunate enough to get the win there. Dallas is just the most balanced team in the league, especially when Jake Oettinger's playing the way that he is. I don't think that Vegas goes out and loses four in a row. That would be in itself shocking, even against a team like the Dallas Stars. But Dallas is so good. They've won games without Mason Marchman and Roddick Fox, so they haven't had Yanni Hakanpää the entire series. Dallas just looks like a juggernaut. Guys, Jake Oettinger has not allowed a goal in the third period in the playoffs. If that's not lockdown goaltending, I don't know what is. And it's not because he hasn't been tested, because he has absolutely been tested. And he has the traffic in front, and he has to deal with all these bodies in front of him, because that's what Vegas does really well. If you would have said to me that I didn't think Dallas, the way that things went in the first two games, was going to get back in this series, but credit to them and credit to Pete DeBoer for making the adjustments and sticking with what has worked the entire season, that Dallas now leads 3-2. Having said all that, I really want to see Vegas win this one, because there's nothing better than game seven, and to have multiple game sevens this weekend would be fantastic. Couple that with the start of the Rangers Carolina series on Sunday. That's, you can't really ask for much more, but I think I picked Dallas in seven here. I also picked Dallas to go to the cup. So I'm standing by my word, but I really hope for an entertaining game tonight.
Matty, great stuff, man. Always appreciate the time. Go be a super dad. We'll chat with you again soon, pal.
My daughter will aim for average dad, and she'll probably be okay with it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, buddy. Have a good weekend.
Take care. You too.
Matt Marchese joining us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, host of the Fan Checkdown Show during the NFL season, and of course, regular contributor on the Jeff Merrick Show here on Sportsnet 960. Take a break. Come back on the other side. Get your text in to 960-960. We're going to end the week off with the Friday DMs and pass the show over to you. Whatever you want to talk about, hit us up on the Fan feedback line. While you do that, we'll take a break and come back on the other side. But right now, the latest with the Toronto Blue Jays with our pal Shan Vergy.
Time now for the Jays Report on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Shan Vergy.
There's no denying that it's been an ugly stretch for the Toronto Blue Jays. They've won just three of their last 11 games, averaging just over 2.5 runs per game. On the season, they're now 22nd in the league for home runs, 24th for batting average, and have the third least runs batted in, just ahead of the Oakland Athletics and the Chicago White Sox. In case you weren't aware, the Athletics are getting relocated and can barely get 1,000 people to attend their games, and the White Sox have won 6 games all season. Not the teams you want to be associated with. They'll have a chance to get the team back on track with an evenly matched series against the 15-16 Washington Nationals starting later this afternoon. Yusei Kikuchi will get the start for the Jays, and Patrick Corbin will be on the hill for the Nats. Corbin has struggled against the Jays lineup in the past, allowing a .378 batting average with just 12 strikeouts in 74 at-bats, and he is 0-3 on the season. His earned runs line is set at 3.5 with plus 115 odds. First pitch will be at 4:45, and we won't have this game on the 960 airwaves with Game 1 between the Calgary Wranglers and the Coachella Valley Firebirds tonight, but you can listen on the Sportsnet app. Enjoy the game tonight. I'm Shan Vergy, and that was your Jays Report.
Catch the Blue Jays all season long, right here on Calgary's home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, we're wrapping up Hour 2 here on the program this Friday, May 3rd. It's a Wranglers game day, a playoff game day here on Sportsnet 960. We're excited to bring you playoff hockey tonight. Game 1, Round 2. Wranglers and the Firebirds. Coachella Valley has not played in 12 days thanks to a first-round bye. Wranglers, of course, coming off a 2-0 series sweep of the Tucson Roadrunners. All your coverage right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Me and GVP will have your Wranglers pregame show at 6 o'clock to get you set for the matchup. And the dynamic duo of Sandra Priscina and Matt Rose on the call tonight, starting at 7 o'clock right here in your home of Wranglers hockey, Sportsnet 960, The Fan. We'll kick off the Friday DMs in just a few minutes, where we turn the show over to you. Whatever you want to talk about, sports, Flames, I'm talking about NFL football, the draft that happened a couple weeks ago. Talk about personal life, what Julian had for lunch, if that's up your alley. Whatever you want to talk about, 960-960. We turn the show over to you. The Friday DMs coming up in just a few moments. So get your texts in, 960-960. Julian, you excited for some playoff hockey tonight, man?
I sure am. I actually am. I always think it's cool, even if it is just the HL, just to see what the crowds are like in May and seeing people come out for some of the younger players. I mean, a lot of people in this market want to see younger players make an impact on this team. And there's definitely still some work that needs to be done in terms of getting more quality young players as part of the future going forward. But to take in a playoff series where you get to see guys like Dustin Wolfe and Jacob Peltier and Matthew Coronado, I think for fans who are really excited about the future, there's an opportunity for them tonight and in game two of their series against Coachella Valley.
Looks like, as I peruse Ticketmaster, you can hit the CalgaryWranglers.com/playoffs. They've opened up part of the second deck for tonight's game. Okay. Some prime second deck seating available to you. I'm going to be honest, most of the lower bowl sold out, it looks like. Just some individual tickets scattered around for Friday night's game. Some upper level in the 100 sections still available, but also some sections available in the 200 level. So tickets selling fast and still a chance to get up there. If you're looking for something to do on Friday, as Julian said, this is one of the benefits of having an American Hockey League team here in Calgary, is a chance to A, experience some playoff hockey, but go see some of these top prospects. You know, Dustin Wolf, Matt Cornell, these aren't guys that are long for the AHL. You won't get this opportunity very often. So go out and support them. And then again, Sunday afternoon, 4 o'clock start, game 2, Coachella Valley and the Calgary Wranglers. And as we discussed with Brett Sutter on the show Thursday, Coachella Valley had the decision whether to start the series on the road or at home. They obviously take the 3 games at home, but we'll start things off in Calgary and a chance for revenge. This is the team that knocked them out of the postseason last year, Julian. Coachella Valley, the AHL affiliate of the Seattle Kraken, and they've been a tough team, top team in the Pacific Division.
Yeah. Also, if you, I don't know if you remember, but last year, but the Wranglers were in the opposite of the situation, and they opted to start the series in Calgary. So very interesting that Coachella Valley is opting for the same arrangement of games in this series as was last year, but they're the lower seed this time.
960-960, we got some questions coming in for the Friday DMs. We'll give you just a couple more seconds, a couple more minutes, we'll say, to get your text in at 960-960 before we hand things over to Shan for the Friday DMs. Whatever you want to chat about on this Friday, we hand the show over to you in just moments. 2 game 6s tonight, Julian. Do we see any more game 7s? Predators and Golden Knights need a win tonight.
I think both. On. Sorry. Yeah.
He's too focused on the glasses.
Well, you guys are so mean for playing that song. It's one mistake.
You've done it twice today.
I did it twice? No, I didn't do it twice.
You did earlier.
No, I didn't.
You did.
No, I did not. Mm-hmm. No. When did I do it?
We were talking with Moran.
Yeah. And I did it?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
You did.
No, I did not. Shine. I thought you were going to talk.
We shine too bright.
No. I thought you were going to talk at that instance, and then that's what happened.
Oh, okay.
I didn't forget to press it.
Oh,
I thought we're supposed to be a team, and we're supposed to be able to communicate with each other and not throw each other under the bus, that we would have figured that out.
Can't believe you hate me like that.
I can't believe you hate me like that.
Are we going to have more game 7s?
Yeah, I think both of these series will go to game 7s. I think I've said it throughout the show. I think Nashville has looked like the better team at times, and I think they're going to find a way to play a really good effort in game 6 and they force a game 7. Dallas and Vegas. Look, Vegas, they have the 2-0 lead. It's kind of coming down like an avalanche, but the fact that they have a home game, you get to play against Dallas. They've played pretty well at different points in this series too. They're no slouches either. I see them getting the better of Dallas and Jake Oettinger in game 6, and then they force a game 7. I think it's for the best of everyone.
Game 7, baby! Game 7! Game 7!
Love that soundbite.
Cam's been waiting all day to play that one.
I've been waiting all day
to
hear it.
You have no idea.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much for getting that, by the way. I really appreciate it. Whenever I think of game 7s in any sport, I think of Zaza.
We're going to game 7, baby!
I'm glad that you guys appreciate Zaza Pachulia yelling out game 7 as much as I do.
Let's get to it. You can still get your text in to 960-960, but it's time to end off this Friday like we always do, turning the show over to you for the Friday DMs.
Who still uses that old mailbox? Time to bring it into the 21st century. Your burning questions answered on the Friday DMs.
Anything and everything you want to talk about, Logo, Julian along with you, 960-960, the Friday DMs are open to you, and we hand things over to the DM master himself,
Julian McKenzie.
Shanvergy.
Oh, that's me.
Yeah.
We're going
to
start with...
I tried to make Julian the DM master, but he didn't want it last week.
He denied it, but we all know what the truth is here. We can get into this again. I'm sure a question will
it's
come
not
up.
Not throwing under the bus.
We're not throwing. It's a good thing, I think. We should probably start. Colton S says, "If you could instantly learn a language overnight, which language are you choosing?"
Italian.
You did not say it that way.
Yeah.
I would say I'm actually trying to learn German now on Duolingo. I would say German.
Can I ask why?
I when I was in CJEP, I took a German course, and I liked it. So I just tried to continue to learn the language, and it's good to know a couple words. And if I'm ever lucky enough to visit Germany one day, maybe I'll have a little, not that great, but still somewhat decent understanding of the language. I think it's good to learn languages. It's good to expand your brain.
This one from Brad in Cochrane. Matt Coronato and Jacob Pelche will end up being tweeners like Matty Phillips. Discuss.
Is this implying that Matty Phillips was a tweener here in Calgary? Because he technically wasn't.
I think where he's at now is what he's talking about.
I feel as if
they've already had more success than Matt Phillips at the NHL level.
I think that Matt Coronato and his shot is, the shot's too good for him to just be destined as a tweener. I think if he figures out other facets of his game, at the very least, he could be a decent middle of the lineup player. Jacques Pelletier, I can understand maybe his ceiling is a little bit different, where he's a bit of a bottom six guy who could provide some energy. But I agree with Logo as well. I think they've both achieved more success in the NHL than Matthew Phillips has. And I think as you look over the course of their careers, that will continue to be the case, just off of the skill set that they have and the size. I hate to say it, but I think what they bring to the table too, even though they're both smaller guys, they try to find ways to play a little bit bigger than what they are.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Coronado's dominated at the AHL level in his first pro season. It's a very good sign for his transition eventually to full-time in the NHL. Just because it didn't happen right away this year doesn't make me think less of Matt Coronado as a prospect. Had he struggled at the AHL level in his first transition to pro hockey, I could understand the conversation more. But look at what he does at the American Hockey League level, second best league in the world, and he does it very well. I think that's going to translate for him to the NHL level, and I think his ceiling is much higher than that of a Matthew Phillips. Pelche is an interesting one. I'm not trying to rag on. I do think that, you know, there's a potential for him to be a bottom six energy guy,
yeah,
who skates well, brings a lot of energy to groups. He's just a generally good guy to be around, and I think well-liked by his teammates. So maybe not the same ceiling, but could I see Jacob Pelche being a regular NHLer? Sure. Matt Phillips hasn't done that. I mean, we can have the conversation about Calgary not using Matt Phillips correctly and that being an issue before he went off to Washington/Pittsburgh/Washington again. But I wouldn't put either one of those guys right now, to me, as a worry about it being just a tweener.
Yeah, I think I think we're both agreeing on this point. Yep. Here. Yeah.
This is something that I think we've been looking to discuss on this show for a while. I'm glad we're getting into it now. I believe the common phrase is that toast always lands butter side down, but this a no name. Why does toast always land brown side down?
The heat in the toaster does things to the bread.
Right, but what if the toast has just come out of the toaster? Pardon me, it's been out of the toaster for a while. It's somewhat cold.
Still brown, unless you burnt it.
No, I understand that, but why? Because you're saying the heat, right? The heat would make it land on the dark side, correct?
I don't even know if I know what we're talking about.
Doesn't heat rise anyway?
See, that's a good point.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, so is the toast, actually.
Logan, your thoughts?
It is what it is.
Okay.
That is a great answer. That is a great answer.
J-Mac, how would you say Logan Gordon is if he was a hockey player from Montreal?
Logan.
How would you say Logan Gordon as if he were a hockey player from Montreal?
Logan Gordon.
Well, that answers that.
I'm from Montreal. My name's Julian McKenzie. How would you say my name?
I think
how would I say my name? Julian McKenzie.
There wouldn't be a French accent on my name because I'm not of French descent in any way, shape, or form.
I mean, I guess like you could technically like be like a francophone guy, and your family name could be the Gordons, and maybe you were named Logan, and maybe I don't know, but I would probably just say Logan Gordon.
I think what Ned wants is
Logan Gordon.
That's what he wants.
That's what they want.
Okay, this
that's
one.
What they want.
Give the people what he wants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Are you happy, Ned?
This one. This one coming from Dave. Favorites to win the West. Favorites to win the East.
Colorado is my favorite in the West. I know they've got a tougher path than maybe Edmonton or Vancouver in that other side, but God, they dominated Winnipeg. Like, it was stupid. And Florida. I think they're going to, I was going to say something, slap whoever they play next round.
What were you going to say? You know what? I don't want to know. I don't want to. I don't want to know what you're going to say.
You're good. That's good. I didn't do it.
I think technically this scenario is still alive for me. I tried to predict that at the beginning of the playoffs. I think Dallas, I'm still confident in Dallas for them to get out of the West. I think they're the best team on paper anyway, but for what it's worth on the West side, just in all facets, really, they're my pick to win the cup. Out of the East, you know what? As good as Florida's looked, I'd love to see the Rangers get out of the East. I think if we get a Florida Rangers conference final, that could be really fun. Get some real good goaltending out of that.
This one, we don't have a name here. Which team from this entire season, not just playoffs, this entire season, ended up being the biggest disappointment?
Oh.
The Sens. Which team ended up being the biggest disappointment?
The Sens.
Why the Sens? I mean, I don't think I had them making the playoffs.
You didn't have them even competing for a playoff spot?
Not like Buffalo. Buffalo's a bigger disappointment for me. I thought this would have been the year they actually do it.
I don't know. I think the Sens gave a 5-year contract to a goalie and brought in Claude Giroux and Jacob Chychrun over the last year and were supposed to take this big step with Stützle and Tkachuk and lost another coach and lost the GM and don't have a first-round pick. And
That's a disappointment. I guess, I don't know. I think with Buffalo and the strides they've made with the younger players that they've been able to accumulate, guys like Owen Power becoming bigger and bigger studs on that team, that defense corps is supposed to look really good. They end up making a trade for Bowen Byram, who looks like he's been able to fit over there. Remember Devin Levi at the beginning of the year? People thought, okay, maybe he could be that young goalie. Well, he definitely needs more time. At the end of the season, Don Granato loses his job. Both of these two teams are in the same box in terms of the fact that they should be a lot farther ahead in their development, but now they've turned into cautionary tales of what could happen when you tear your team down to the studs, which a lot of teams should still do, but it is not an exact science where you think it's just 2 years, 3 years, and then you're going to be fine. These things take a while. Also, you could arguably put Detroit in that conversation as well.
This one coming from Kyle. What was your favorite nickname growing up?
Nickname that I got?
Yeah.
I mean, I had all the stupid ones because...
List them off.
Gordo. Like
Gordo's stupid?
I mean, what else do you get when your last name's Gordon? You're going to get Gordo.
I call you Flash. I remember the first few times I was guessing on your show,
which
I called you Flash.
Which is the first time... I've gotten that.
But Flash, I think Flash
makes
sense.
Most people my generation, I don't know, are familiar with
Flash Gordon. We're of the same generation.
I know. I just don't know how many people go Flash Gordon.
Flash.
I love it.
I think it's a great nickname. J-Mac has stood the test of time with me for whatever reason.
What about J-Macaroni? Where does that rank?
I like
that is a new one as of today.
I thought that was tremendous.
I think that's that might be top 5, top 10. J Macaroni's pretty creative.
I have stupid sense of humor, so I thought that was funny.
Well, no, I think it's fine. I think it's totally fine. J Macaroni's cool.
And then a follow-up. Are you okay if we just call you that from now on?
No.
Aw. Why, though?
Or I don't know. Like, wait, who's asking that question?
I'm mostly me.
Okay, if it was like the text line, I'd be like, whatever. But like, if you're going to call me J Macaroni, I don't think that's play.
Okay,
that's not a good idea.
Thoughts on the Patrick Beverly fiasco, his antics
clown,
from last night.
You're a clown.
It's a joke. I put
makeup on and be in the next Joker movie. You're a clown.
I liked some of the antics from Pat Bev.
Everyone hates you.
If you're telling me media, the only way they could ask you questions is if they subscribe to your podcast.
You're a loser.
You're a joke. Also, throwing the basketball into the crowd, attacking people. Like, what are you doing?
You're a wannabe Ron Artest.
I don't like that from Pat Bev.
Go throw hands with him, Pat Bev.
Pat Bev is better than
NBA.
This.
You're
Pat Bev is better than this, man. I was really
disappointed. No, he's not. He's actually a bum.
No, look, I think I was disappointed to see that. I get it. Like, he acts a fool more than he should, but I didn't think he'd get down to that level where he's openly chucking a ball in the stands. And also, you know,
well, you can ask me questions if you subscribe to my podcast. Yeah, you're a
that's
bum.
That's a lame thing. Could you imagine if like an NHL player did that? We'd be livid over here.
It's a joke.
Can you imagine if like Rasmus Anderson was all like, "Hey, you guys don't subscribe to my podcast. I'm not answering questions."
Have fun in Sacramento. It's the only team that's gonna want him soon.
What's wrong with Sacramento?
It just feels like a lifeless NBA market.
I mean, yeah.
They were nuts last year with the light the beam thing. It was maybe the loudest crowd.
Pat Bev in lighting the beam in Sacramento might not be that bad of an idea.
Apparently, all the people in the crowd said was Cancun in three, and that resulted in him whipping
like
the
basketball
really at them twice.
Grow up.
Hasn't Pat Bev made jokes about Cancun?
Oh, absolutely. I think he's made jokes about everything. And then whenever it turns,
you
his
wouldn't
way,
know because you don't subscribe to his stupid podcast. So you can't ask him
We've
questions.
Seen reports out there that he got himself banned from ESPN as a result of everything that happened.
Because really
too
bad.
The reporter who asked, tried to ask that question is a producer from ESPN. So if that is the case, well,
too bad,
so sad.
We have another no name here, but with...
put your name on these questions when you text in at 960-960.
With the Austin Matthews illness, we don't know if it's illness, injury, whatever.
It seems like it's both an illness and an injury.
If he is 50%, do you play him in game 7?
No. Your team has found a way to show that they can play without him, and you might as well do everything you can to, I say, keep it going until he's 100%. Why are you putting him in a position where he's going to hurt your team while playing hurt when you've shown that you can win games against this team without him and just let him rest? And if he's able to play round 2 at 100% or closer to 100%, do that.
Yeah, I mean, you've won the last two. I wouldn't rush it in. I know people will. Until we find out exactly what's ailing him, we'll probably dog him for that. But if I'm Sheldon Keefe, you've actually seemed to have gotten some gods of desperation out of your team with him out of the lineup. I'm not saying he'd hurt them, but why rush it? And why risk? Like, I mean, if he's missed the last two elimination games, it has to be something serious.
Yeah.
There's just no doubt in my
last
mind.
Last two elimination games and the third period of another game.
Like, you can't risk that. If that's how bad it is, you can't risk it. So, you see that text? Is that what you're making a face at?
You were looking at the same text, huh?
We can end it on this.
We'll end it on this. This one might be personal. Who has the nicer tushy? This person's wife wants to know.
Pat Steinberg.
Yeah, that's a pretty good answer.
He works out a lot.
Yeah, he does all those spin classes.
He's got great biceps.
In order, Pat, Shan, Julian.
You're putting me second?
John the security guard.
Yeah.
John the security guard gets
Cam,
in on this?
And then me.
Thanks for putting me second, man. I appreciate that.
No, that's enough.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I don't think I can provide a better in-depth list than that. So I think we're just going to have to end on that.
He's Julian McKenzie. I'm Logan Gordon. Thanks to Shan Virgie, outstanding producer, for running the Friday DMs. Thanks to Cam Hughes for keeping the ship on track all week long. And thank you for listening, whether live or on the podcast. We really appreciate it. Thanks for being along for the ride. Again, you can find us wherever you get your favorite podcast, Google, Amazon, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher. The hours go up just as they finish here on Sportsnet 960. Coming up this afternoon, Real Kipper and Born, Flames Talk with Steinberg and Vickers, and then we'll take you to the Saddle Dome. Yes, we're back for playoff hockey in Calgary. It's a Wranglers playoff game day. Sandra Priscina and Matt Rose have the call at 7 o'clock. I'll be back for your pregame show at 6 with GVP. Julian, have yourself a great weekend, my man.
Have yourself and everyone listening a great weekend.
Enjoy the sunny weather. We'll be back on Monday, maybe with the second round all set and ready to go.
Ooh,
we'll have lots to talk about. Enjoy the weekend. Signing off on another edition of Sportsnet Today here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Peace.